Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into a new edition of the Windy City Chronicle podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Gibbons. Today, we're talking all things Blackhawks, offseason preview, draft lottery, and NHL draft, and so on. I got on today with me Tristan Angulo, my Blackhawks beat writer for WindyCityChronicle.com. Tristan, how are you, man? Glad to have you on.
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So let's get right into it. So yesterday, the Hawks had their exit interviews at the United Center. Q talked, Bowman talked a lot. Pretty sure all the players talked, but, you know, we didn't get a lot of quotes from everybody. We got, you know, quotes from the big core guys. But, again, the main focus of yesterday was Corey Crawford and the update on him, the continuous update on him. You know, Bowman and Q keep saying that, you know, he's close to being fully healthy, close to being back on the ice, regular activity. First question for you, Tristan, are you believing what the Hawks say, and do you think Crawford will be 100% by next season?
I'm going to be perfectly honest. I want to believe that Corey Crawford will be ready by day one, and I do think, like, maybe an 85-90% assurance in my head that Corey Crawford will be ready for opening day next season. But the only thing that's holding me back to turning that into 100% is the fact that since the supposed injury happened in December, the Hawks have just closed ranks on the entire subject. Like, the only thing that they've really said is that it's an upper body injury. And then a couple of days later, they said that, you know, Scotty Bowman was quoted saying that it's vertigo-like symptoms. And that's the only thing that we know, apart from, you know, he's close, he's ready, he might come back this season, he might not come back this season, up until, you know, the season ended and he never played another game. And, so I think we can only take them for their word that he's going to be ready and just, you know, cross our fingers that by opening day, it's going to be Corey Crawford.
Yeah, that's obviously the hope. You saw this year how important Corey Crawford was to the team. Even in the past when Corey struggles, he still is able to keep you in games. Again, he's a Stanley Cup winning goaltender. Even Keith said it himself. The defense would have been better if Corey Crawford was back there. You know, he's your goalie. He's one of your, you know, main communicators on that side of the ice. And, you know, the Hawks really did miss Crawford. And I think, you know, we could look back and say, well, if Crawford was, despite all the offense and defensive struggles the Hawks had this year, if Crawford was at least in net, I think, you know, we could be talking about the Hawks being a wild card team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. We finished the year with 76 points. So that's 20 points out. That's 20 points out of the playoff spot. And if you think about it, that's just 10 or 11 games. If Crawford was on net, 10 of those 11 games, maybe 12, 13 of them, would have been wins instead of losses. And, you know, Keith was right. If Crawford is in net, then defensemen would jump into the play more. You would see Keith jumping into the play more. You would probably see Seabrook jumping into the play more, because they know that if something does go wrong, and, like, for example, Osterley or Ruda or Gustafsson make a mistake, they know that they have Crawford there to bail them out.
Yeah, of course, and especially when, you know, the Hawks had their, like you said, their roulette of goalies this year. When you're rotating in guys like Delia at the end of the year, or you had Jeff Glass or Berube or Forsberg, you know, you have a lot of guys that don't have the experience as Crawford and don't have, you know, they say the on-ice camaraderie with the defenseman, and, you know, you're not going to be, they might not be as vocal as Crawford was. Again, their skill level is not going to match what Crawford can do on the ice. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, overall, big loss. And you're right. You know, you said 30 points out of the playoff spot. I mean, you're looking, you know, 10, 11 games, you know, of win, or at least, you know, if you could force some overtime, pick up a point here or there. Mm-hmm. I think the Hawks would have made it definitely close, even with all their offensive struggles and their special team struggles and all their, you know, ups and downs during the season, it just showed that, you know, even they still have a lot of offensive firepower, there's no doubt about it, but the goaltending just, in the end, proved, especially, like, you know, during stretches in January and February where the Hawks really had to turn around and really get it going if they want to even have a chance at the playoffs come April. The goaltending just did not work out for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I always go back to one stretch in February where, you know, I said it, you said it, a lot of other people said it. There was a stretch right in the beginning of February where they could really turn things around. They were playing some teams with their, you know, with their caliber of skill. They had Vancouver, they had Calgary twice. You know, they had a chance where they could, you know, turn it around. They ended January. They won ended January, last 2 weeks in January. They only won two games. They went 2-4 or something like that in the end of January. So everyone looked at the beginning of February as, okay, let's start fresh, let's get it going. And they ended up losing, I think it was like 8 or 9 straight. So
yeah,
you know, that was the point where the Hawks could have really maybe turned around, really made it interesting in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, February would lose them. And, you know, say what you will about how porous this defense was, if Crawford was there backing them up, you would probably have won maybe half of those games.
Yeah, I mean, you look, Calgary, there was a home-to-home. We lost 4-3 in OT there, 3-2 at home. Minnesota was bad, was 3-0 blowout. That Arizona game on February 12th, that really just hurt. I think that was when I think us as fans kind of maybe threw in the towel a little bit because we, you know, going up against the Coyotes, you lose 6-1. You know, that was a tough one. That's where you kind of felt like, okay, maybe this season really is not going to work out.
Yeah.
Another point yesterday in the exit interviews was not really necessarily about the team, but about the off season. Kane, Murphy, Yurko, those three said they were going to be participating in the hockey championships, the world championships coming up. So that was big news. Tristan, are you still for, you know, the whole debate of should the NHL let their guys play in the championships and Olympics? Do you think it's okay?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a good way to promote the game not only worldwide but here at home. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Don't worry about Canada. You know, people there live and breathe hockey. But in America, there's still a lot of room for the game to grow. And, you know, even though it happens every 2 years, even though it only happens every 4 years, the fact that you see NHL stars playing in the Olympics is a big boost for the league. That's free publicity. No matter how you slice it with general management, no matter how you slice it with owners, it's publicity. That's why I do not understand why the general manager decided to not allow the players to play this loud.
Yeah, I mean, especially I forgot DeBrincat's also playing for USA. Schmaltz is still thinking about it. I think that'd be really cool if, you know, you got Kane, DeBrincat, and Schmaltz out there at once on the ice. You know, that'd be a pretty interesting line. Like, you know, that's like why you want to tune in. You know, of course, you're still going to watch hockey in the Olympics, but would you rather watch a bunch of junior guys or would you rather watch a bunch of NHL stars team up for a couple weeks, you know, in the Winter Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
It definitely brings more, a different factor to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying that the Olympics are an event where you bring out the best of the best, then why not, you know, then why not let the best of the best play? And if you keep saying that the NHL is the best league in the world, why not, you know, why not get it?
So that was another, I guess you could say, positive of the exit interviews, guys that are saying they're going to play for the World Championships. That's going to be fun to watch. And then, again, outside of Crawford, the other big talks was on the core struggles. Bowman has addressed this multiple times this year, saying that, you know, our core of Kane, Taze, Keith, and Seabrook, they still got plenty left in the tank. We know Kane has plenty left. He's still playing at an all-star caliber level. You know, Taze had an off year. You know, Keith and Seabs had, you know, so-called down years. But Bowman still believes they have plenty left. Tristan, what's your take on, you know, we know Kane played well. Kane didn't, you know, have a, you you know, a very good year, but he still finished, you know, atop of the league in, or top, you know, in career highs. You know, he was close, or he still had a, you know, a Patrick Kane year. Do you think that Keith, Seabrook, and Toews can get back to that level next year?
I think they can. I hope they can, and I think they can, and I do believe that they can. I think with Toews, Bowman said it as much, even when he was posting high numbers back when it was his second or third year in the league. Toews has always had slow starts. You know, he doesn't have good October numbers, and he always had middling November numbers. But his December numbers up until the rest of the year have always been strong. Last year and this year were down. He finished, I think, with 20 goals this year. That's a career low. He talked to the Chicago Sun-Times yesterday, and he talked about how he's thinking about sacrificing size and strength for speed and explosiveness. Because maybe he's at that mindset where, you know, the league is going towards speed and skill, and that's where he needs to go. But, you know, Jonathan Toews may not have the career numbers that Patrick Kane has, because, you know, he doesn't do pretty. He always does the gritty stuff. He gums up corners, he battles loose pucks, he fights traffic down low. That's what Jonathan Toews does. He doesn't have highlight reel goals or, you know, lunch pail goals. So that's the Jonathan Toews that we know. These past 2 years, it hasn't been working for him. You can say that maybe that's because he's had a rotating lineup of left wingers or right wingers since Todd left. You know, since Saad left 2 years ago, and then Saad came back, but Marian Hossa didn't play. So he's always had that. He doesn't have the same chemistry that he's been used to. So maybe he's looking for a different path in order to produce more. So we'll just have to wait and see next year whether or not he's gonna be a size and strength player, or he's going to be a speed and skill player. We'll just have to wait and see that game.
Yeah, quick point on Toews. I think, you know, he said all the right things. You know, it's an ever-changing league. You know, the league is going to change from, you know, could change every year, you know, changes within the decade, just how the new style of players. And he's right, you know, speed and explosiveness is how it's kind of going toward. You know, you see guys like McDavid and Johnny Udrow and Austin Matthews. I mean, these guys are nuts. You know, those guys are fast. They're explosive. Yeah. They got those highlight reel goals. So, you know, if Toews recognizes that, and if he's going to really switch up his game, then we could see a whole side of Toews that we haven't seen before at the age of 30.
I know. Yeah.
And I do think
Toews just realized this past 2 years that whatever style of play that the Hawks have been playing against the league these past 9-10 years, the league has caught up, and now he has to do something.
Yeah, because I mean the Hawks they pretty much run the decade. There's no doubt. There's no doubt about that, especially in their conference. So yeah, I mean as long as they can adapt and overcome and they can fix things, that's why there's plenty of optimism from the front office and the players that they can get back on track.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Going to the other core guys, Keith and Seabrook, quick point on both those guys. They're still, you know, I think very valuable to the team, even though maybe age is catching up to him. Keith is still one. You can still call him one of the best defensemen in the league when he's on top of his game, considering the amount of ice time he gets, you know, his speed, his strength. Against Seabrook, everyone likes to point out that, you know, Seabrook's has the cap hit of $6 million and whatever, and you know, everyone's like, you know, he doesn't play up to that. But you know, we always got to talk about how, you know, he earned the contract helping us win cups, and you know, it wasn't his fault that he got all that money. You know, are the Hawks maybe regretting all that? Are the Hawks maybe regretting all that money? Sure, but I still think that he can, you know, he can play better next year. We saw toward the end of the season, he was scoring a little bit more. I think Keith has always I think Seabrook has always had a little bit more of an edge, maybe on the offensive side.
Mm-hmm.
It's going out on a limb there. I could be wrong. People could say that I'm wrong, but that's what just, you know, just the initial feeling is. But, you know, when we look at Keith and Seabrook, we're really not looking for offensive production there. You know, we need block shots. We need takeaways in the neutral zone. We need, you know, to control the blue line on the defensive and offensive ends. You know, we're going to get offensive defensemen, if you want to so-call it that, other ways, or we're just going to have so many explosive forwards that our defensemen really don't have to worry about getting into play so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for them, it's just a renewed focus and just coming back healthy. Again, we're going to have another long off season, even though the fans don't like it, the players don't like it, but we're getting out a little bit early. So hopefully that, you know, you come back renewed focus. Both those guys aren't playing in the Worlds, so they're going to have a, you know, off season to think about it, get come back ready. And the Hawks are, you know, probably going to do some work in the defensive area anyway. So, you know, we'll have some more help there.
Yeah. I think with Keith and Seabrook, coming back to what I said earlier about Taves, Keith and Seabrook are now just realizing that their style of play for the past 9 or 10 years, where they would join the rush with Patrick Kane and Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossein and Brandon Saad, the league has caught up to that. And, you know, adding up to the fact that this year they were playing with four other defensemen that are not as, you know, not as good as Jalmerson and Oduya.
Mm-hmm.
They had a hard time recognizing that the Hawks became vulnerable as far as transition games are concerned. If you would look at most of the games that they played this year, when the Hawks would make an offensive play and it doesn't work, they didn't have an answer with the other team's transition game. They just didn't have an answer. And sometimes you would just see Keith looking or Seabrook looking. And I think that dumbfounded them for the first week.
Yeah, I mean, there were plenty of times this year I'm watching the games and I'm just dumbfounded at, you know, how did they miss that, or how did they mess up there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just,
yeah,
it's uncanny for those guys.
It is. It really is. And I think it's just a matter of them realizing that, oh crap, this, you know, they figured us out.
Yeah,
and they didn't have an answer for it. But yeah. as the year progressed, you know, the last 30 games or so, even though there were still some defensive mistakes and there were a lot of defensive mistakes, Ethan Seabrook tried to change their game a little bit, and I think you would see more of that. I think it's just a matter of, like, once again, you know, the name of the game now is speed and skill. So you'll probably see Seabrook a little bit leaner and a little bit faster than what he was, you know, this season. Because, you know, say what you will about Ben Seabrook, you know, complain about his contract, but, you know, all you want, but in, you know, during his heydays, he was pretty fast.
Yeah.
And I think he just did that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So while we're on the topic of defense, we'll transition into our portion of the off-season preview portion of the show. We'll stick on defense. As you look, one of my favorite websites for hockey, of course, is capfriendly.com. Breaks down
mm-hmm.
all the salaries and all that. So again, every defenseman's coming back. Seabrook, Keith, Murphy, Ruta. We'll have Blake Hillman back again. And then Gustafson and Ruta got those new deals. Osterley's going to be back. So, you know, you think, oh, yeah, all these guys are going to be back. But so are the Hawks really going to add a defenseman? And, you know, Bowman left it open during the pregame show the other day that it could be a possibility to add a defenseman. You know, it all comes down to the cap. But even though the Hawks are bringing all these guys back, I still think there's plenty of room for improvement, considering, you know, if Keith and Seabrook are on the decline, Connor Murphy really didn't play up to what we would think. For the cap hit, not just for the cap hit, just for the overall player that, you know, we thought we could trade Jalmerson for and get Murphy back. You know, he's not going to be what Jalmerson was. but hopefully, you know, again, a younger version and a more versatile, you know, versatile player. Ruda and Gustafsson, you know, they were okay. Gustafsson is more of, he likes, you know, he's gonna be on the rush with the forwards. He's gonna try and get toward the goal. I don't mind him on the offensive end if he's gonna really be that active. But again, you want to focus on the defenseman end for the defenseman, especially. That's, you know, my point of view. I want the defenseman to, you know, help out with goals and assists. But you know, I like the block shots stat more overall than the defenseman.
Yes. I think Bowman left it, you know, coming back to what you said, I think he left it a little bit open. This is a different year for him. I think this is the very first time in his tenure as GM where he has actual money to spend. But I don't think he will spend unless, you know, like you said, unless it makes sense as far as cap hits and term is concerned. I don't think you're gonna see him coming after a John Carlson. You know, he's gonna do his due diligence, of course. He's gonna pick up the phone, he's gonna say, okay, you know, I have so much money, I have so much term to give, or you know, what are you looking for? And
yeah,
if it doesn't make sense for him, if it doesn't make sense for the team, He's gonna walk away from John Carlson. And but you know, John Carlson's not the only defenseman that's out there. You know, you have Calvin DeHaan, you have Ian Cole, you have Mike Green, but Mike Green's a little bit older. So
yeah.
I think Stan Bowman's preparing us for a possibility that he might not get a defenseman in free agency, and he might stand pat with what he has in the blue line and just hope that Keith and Seabrook turn their game around. Just hope that Eric Gustafsson, you know, fires up on all cylinders offensively, and that Jan Ruda and Osterley and Connor Murphy just up their game as a stay-at-home defenseman.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like when Ruda and Gustafsson got their deals, was that, okay, Bowman's going to come back with the same guys, you know. And that was, you know, that posed a big question for fans. Like, really? You know, it's not working this year. What makes you think it's going to work next year?
Yeah.
But then, like,
and
you,
I think,
like you said, go ahead.
Also, he has, like, two other defensemen that he mentioned in his exit interviews that he's probably looking at making the leap next season. The number one draft pick for the Blackhawks last year, Henry Yokiharu. He's currently playing for the Portland Winterhawks. They're currently in the second round of the playoffs, I think. And he's had a good year with them. And he's more of a puck moving offensive defenseman. You know, gets around the corners, has a mean shot. So Bowman thinks that, you know, Bowman did add the caveat saying that defensemen as young as Yokiharu rarely break into the NHL unless of course you're Rasmus Dahlin or an Aaron Ekblad, where you're a generation player and you can play from day one. But I think he's hoping that Yokiharu will be NHL ready coming out of training camp this fall. And then he also mentioned another defenseman, Ian Mitchell. He was actually Blake Hillman's D partner back when they were playing at the University of Denver. He was singing the praises of Mitchell. But unlike Yokiharu, Ian Mitchell's more of a stay-at-home defenseman. And you know, one of the reasons why Denver made it to the Final Four? I don't think they made it to the Frozen Four. But one of the reasons why Denver, you know, made it to the tournament was because of Hillman and was because of the chemistry between Hillman and Mitchell. I think with Hillman playing the last two or three games of the season, and acquitting himself pretty well as far as, you know, as far as playing those games were concerned, because those weren't just two games versus any other NHL team. They were against the Blues and the Avs, and the Blues and the Avs were playing for their playoff lives. So,
yeah,
you know, Hillman was basically playing playoff hockey.
Almost, I mean,
he was almost playing playoff hockey. I mean, most of the players in this team were probably not playing playoff hockey, but he was playing playoff hockey. So, you know, it was kind of a baptismal of fire for him, and he ended up with, like, I think 6 hits and a goal. So I think that Bowman is banking on those two being NHL ready for next season, and hoping that the defensemen that he has on contract will turn their games around.
I mean, yeah, that's what it looks like. I mean, the hope is that Ojikari was ready for next season. He's what, like 19? So, I mean, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to break into the NHL at that age, especially, you know, defenseman or forward, no matter what. But, yeah, you hope he's going to get every opportunity in camp and preseason. And I'd say, if anything, at least he's playing for Rockford to start the year. You know, you want to see where he's at with closer to NHL talent. But, yeah, like you said, to wrap up the defense, it looks like Bowman's staying pat. He trusts the guys he has, but leaves the window open for getting someone. You know, I think one guy that really intrigues me is DeHaan from the Islanders. I think, you know, he's really doesn't have the offensive spark. But again, that's not what I look for. I like his block shot numbers.
Yeah, he's a shot blocker.
Yeah, when we did the round table with Alex a couple weeks ago for Windy City Chronicle, I mentioned in there he was a shot blocker. He was, I think last year he was at least, it was top 10, top 20. He was up there at the top of the league with shot blocks. And, you know, the Hawks still have not placed, the Hawks have still not replaced Nicholas Hjalmarsson. So, I mean, if you're looking for a guy like his caliber, a guy that is, you know, his cap hit might not be too severe. It might not, you know, really lock you up. But, you know, if you're looking, you know, it's probably safer to go, you know, toward him than if you were to go and chase, you know, somebody like Mike Green, who's a little bit older. And, you know, he's going to want stability. He wants a 6 or 7 year deal. I think if Bowman's going to add a defenseman, you want to look more of a 2 or 3 year deal, because considering what the Hawks have in the system for defense, you know, the hope is that you replace all the veterans with younger guys who are going to become established veterans. So I don't think you're looking at long-term deals.
Yeah. And here's a dark horse candidate for just something to think about. Jacob Trouba, he's a defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. He's 24 years old. He's going to be a restricted free agent after next season. Now, offer sheets don't happen that much in the NHL.
No, not really.
It doesn't happen that much. I mean, it almost happened to us. I believe after the 2010 Cup, they offer-sheeted Nick Chalmerson, and the Hawks matched, and that's why we lost Anthony Yemi. But the Winnipeg Jets, they're having a great season. They're going to make it to they made it to the Stanley Cup playoffs. If they make it, like, to the second or even to the conference finals, they're going to have a lot of people that they're going to have to pay. Patrick Laine is at the very end of his entry-level contract. I think Josh Morrissey is up for a re-up. Brian Little is up for a re-up.
They're gonna
have to seriously pay some people. And I think Shevardnadze, the GM over there, will have to lose some guys. And I think Jacob Trouba, you know, if the Jets somehow make it through the Stanley Cup playoffs, or if they win the cup, they're going to have some decisions that they're going to have to make. And,
big decisions.
And Trouba's right there for the picking.
Yeah, like you said, again, we're talking about defense. Again, we're thinking if Bowman's going to add anybody or he's going to stay pat. The Hawks do have some money. The Hawks will have some money with, you know, as bad as it sounds, you know, Marian Hossa, there was no there's been no advancement or no, you know, he's not getting better. So I think.
No, I think he's not going to play. He's not going to play next season.
That's unfortunate because, you know, Hossa was a big part. Agent signing, love Big Hoss to death. So, you know, that's a killer. But, you know, you free up the salary cap in the big scheme of things. But when you like, oh, yeah, the Hawks have all this money. But then you got to look to what the Hawks want to do, and that's to bring back all the restricted free agent guys. Are they going to want to bring back Duclair? Do they still have interest in Yurko? They definitely want to bring back Hinostroza. I think they're all in on bringing back John Hayden.
They're all in on DeBrincat. They're all in on Hayden. They're all in on Schmaltz. Duclair is probably more of a question mark right now. Yurko, I know Yurko wants to come back. I just don't know if they're going to have the room for him, or because he had a pretty good second half, like the tail end of the second half of the season. He had, you know, he played really well. So I don't know if Bowman's going to try and stick him in somewhere, you know, as a third line guy or a fourth line guy or someone that they call up for Brock when there's an injury or something like that. And now, especially that Patrick Sharp retired, they're going to need some veteran presence out there. And the main thinking is that Tommy Wingles, you know, no matter what happens with Boston, he might. There's a big possibility that he's going to come back. So Yurko might be the odd man out on that one.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Yurko could be the odd man out, considering that Sakura's going to be on the team full time. Brinkat. I'd say Duclair has a lot more to offer than Yurko. You know, John Hayden's still in the mix. So, again, that money's going to go quick. You know, not saying these guys are going to get these huge contracts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the NHL, it's all about – it's a big numbers game considering the cap. Mm-hmm. Even with the jump, you know, it's still going to be a big numbers game. You know, who's going to get – who's going to get a rock – who's going to get a Rockford contract? Who's going to be in the minor leagues?
It's going to be bridge deals. It's going to be – Bowman's going to be handing bridge deals.
Yeah, exactly. 1 year, maybe a 2 year deal with you know, second year as an option. Because, you know, these guys still got to prove themselves. I mean, Duclair's 22, which is great. Let's see. Hinostroza's 24. John Hayden's 23. So it's not like, you know, they haven't earned their big paydays yet, but the Hawks can set it up to where, you know, you play well for us, you're going to get your big payday and you're going to be part of the future. So, yeah, a lot of bridge deals, and that opens up the possibility of signing, you know, maybe one of the top, you know, a top four defenseman like DeHaan to a 2-3 year deal. You know, right now we can sit here and look at the paper and we can say, oh, yeah, this is an easy fix. You know, we hope that you get the restricted free agents back and you sign maybe one defenseman and Crawford's healthy and you get somebody else, like, you know, you get Edsel or Hojikaru to really step up next season and you're back in the fold.
Yeah, I mean –
That is the hope.
I mean, it's easy to, you know, armchair GM all of this, but it's all going to come up to how these players are going to play next season.
Yeah, and it's good I brought up Edsel. I wanted him to be a kind of a talking point here on the show as we end. We got about 25 minutes left. Edsel, it was small sample size, but I think he'll definitely be with the team next year, whether it's with the active roster in Rockford. I could see Edsel starting out in Rockford just to get more used to the American game. But, you know, small sample size, he didn't really have the big wow factor. You know, there wasn't really a lot of time for him to be able to do that. But, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, DeBrincat, Sakura, and Edsel on one line. You know, that's possibly a line of the future. So, I mean, that's a lot of firepower there. That's a lot. So,
yeah, that was a fun 2 games to watch.
It was, yeah. So what's your take on Victor Edsel? Do you think that he will be on the opening day roster, or is he maybe going to maybe see some Rockford time?
I probably, you know, it's really too early to say. I think he might end up in Rockford for the beginning of the season. I think the Blackhawks still don't know if they want to play him in wing or they want to play him in center. Because I know when he was playing in Europe, he was playing center. But playing center in European ice as opposed to playing center in American ice are two completely different animals. There's a much bigger, you know, European ice is bigger, so there's a much bigger room to make plays. When you're playing center in American ice, you need to be precise. You need to win that faceoff because there's not much room.
Yeah.
So I think the Hawks will have to decide whether they want to play him center or they want to play him as a winger. I think if they decide that they want him as a winger, he'll probably start with the team. He'll probably start with the Blackhawks. But if they decide that if they want him as like a third line centerman or maybe a second line centerman, then they'll probably have to stick him in Rockford for a couple of games just to hone those faceoffs.
Yeah, that always seems to be the funny thing with the Hawks is like they draft these center guys and they end up playing the wing, and like you're like, well, they were supposed, we drafted them as centers. Like, don't we have to find more centers than just Tazen and Isimov? Like, you know, what are we doing out here? Like, you know, Hayden center was drafted, you know, like, oh yeah, he's going to be center now. He's, you know, he's out there playing the wing. Schmaltz had some time at the wing, but he seems to be a center now. Duclair's a wing, but yeah, I mean, it seems like the Hawks, they got to start finding their centers. And I think if they believe Edsel's going to be a center, then yeah, he'll have some Rockford time. Otherwise, you know, you got to keep him around if you're going to put him on the wing because of, you know, his offensive production.
And yeah, it's been a struggle when the Hawks were making the playoffs, and now it's a struggle when they're not making the playoffs, you know?
Yeah. And I think you could definitely say it's more important than ever considering that the cup window's closing. And, you know, before you just had, you know, you look back at recent years and, you know, when everyone's on top of their game, you know, sometimes it doesn't, you know, really matter about the positions. And especially when you're winning, you're not really too focused on the prospects in the system. You know, it's just like, you know, just like in baseball, you know, you're all in on the minor leagues when you're trying to build a championship team. Everyone's watching the prospects more than the major league game. And, you know, that was kind of what we were doing with the Hawks. You know, we're like, we're waiting for Sakura. We're waiting for Edsel because the big team, the big league isn't that good.
Yeah. And now, you know, now with the Rockford guys making it to the Rockford making it to the playoffs, Indy Fuel made it to the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's you need to. It's a tough balance, and sometimes you need to sacrifice some of those players in order to get the players that you need for that cup run, and you know. Bowman really rated the pantry back in those years.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to. I mean, it's just like,
yeah, and you really have to, yeah, because if he didn't do that, you know, we won't have those three Cubs.
Nah, that's exactly right. It's like, you know, Cubs, you know, they got rid of, you know, they traded away one of their top shortstops, Gleyber Torres, for Chapman, and you know they. You know, they have to. I mean, as much as you want to keep
those guys around, really
and keep, yeah, and keep fueling the system, you know, you don't want to give away the prospects. You want to keep the prospects.
The prospects and not winning team. And that's why, you know, I have to give it to the Blackhawks. With the trade deadline killing them because they're going after a cup, and with the salary cap killing them in the summer because they have to be cap compliant, you know, you have to hand it to the Hawks scouting staff. They look for different and innovative ways to find players. And, you know, that's how we ended up with Artemi Panarin. That's how we ended up with Michael Kempe. That's how we ended up with Jan Ruda. And, you know, Artemi Panarin was a home run, and it was a home run that went all the way to Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, that's one reason why McDonough kept these boys around, you know, Hugh and Bowman, because they've had success in the past, and we've gone through cap casualties, and we've gone through, you know, rough seasons, and I think that McDonough made the right move, and I think we all wanted those guys back, because, you know,
I mean,
they won before, and they're going to get a chance to win again.
And that, and here's a point of contention of mine, actually. When I was watching that Bowman press conference, it was on Facebook, and they were streaming it live, And they were just comments after comments after comments of how they should have hired Bowman, how he's a bum, how he ruined this team, how he doesn't deserve the credit for 3 Stanley Cup runs because Dale Talon won those cups. All the players that played in the cup runs were all Dale Talon, were all acquired by Dale Talon or whatever. And I just couldn't fathom, like, I actually posted something in there, like, okay, for all those of you who wanted Bowman to be fired, name, you know, give me an NHL name right now that you could say, once we hire this guy, we would be in the Stanley Cup playoffs next year. Like, we would be in the Stanley Cup final next year.
There's
like,
nobody.
Give me a name. Yeah, and there's nobody.
Yeah.
There's no name out there. There's no NHL there's no assistant GM, or there's no assistant coach, or there's no NHL executive on any other team that you can say, once we hire that guy from that team, we'll make good trades, or, you know, that's what they're trying to argue. We'll make good trades again. We'll draft all the best players in the draft, and we'll be in the Stanley Cup finals again next.
No.
And it's the same thing with Q. If you fired Q, I will bet you dollars to donuts the Flames would fire their head coach. They would hire Q in 30 seconds, and 2 years from now, the Flames will be Stanley Cup champ.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if Q was fired, you would have had teams fire on their coaches just cause to go get Q. I mean, he's one of the winningest coaches, one of the best guys of the decade. So you got to hold on to those guys. You got to hold on to
them. Mm-hmm.
As we enter in the last – let's go ahead. Hold on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
As we enter into the last 17, 18 minutes of the show here, I promised we would talk a little bit of the Stanley Cup playoffs despite our Blackhawks not being in it. A lot of intriguing series. You know, I'd say it's a great first round, as it always is. Tristan, what – series are you most intrigued by in the first round? What series are you going to be watching start to finish?
I'm intrigued about that Golden Knights Kings series.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously the guys from Vegas, you know, they've always said that the reason why they've had so much success this year is because they were playing with chips on their shoulders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, as what happens with expansion drafts, you find out who's expendable, who the team thinks is expendable and who the team thinks is not. And obviously, when they were sent to Vegas, you know, they all think, oh, you know, my team thinks I'm expendable. So now I'm going to show them that, you know, I'm a good hockey player. And, you know, they wrote that. They rode that all the way to the playoffs. But I don't think the playoffs are a completely different animal. And I don't think they have the I don't think they'll have the mental fortitude to survive the wear and tear of a Stanley Cup playoff, especially against the Kings. You know how the Kings are. The Kings may be a good willy-nilly team during the playoffs, during the regular season, but once the playoffs start, you know, the Kings, you know, like the Blackhawks of old, they just turn on a switch. You know, they'll score an early goal in the first period, and they'll just drum up everything up until they win it 1-0.
Yeah, I mean.
So I don't think the Knights have an answer for that, and I think that's one of those series where it's going to be a low scoring series, probably like 2-1, 1-0, or 3-2, and I think the Kings probably pull it off in 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, I mean, you look back in the decade, especially the early part of the decade, you know, it was either Blackhawks or Kings coming out of the West for the Cup final. I mean, those were great series to watch. Those were two teams on top of their game. So, I mean, the Canes, again, The Canes had some, down years. They got rid of Sutter. They got rid of the GM, but now they're back. They're in the wild card, but they could definitely give it a run. The intriguing series for me is I really like the Capitals and the Blue Jackets. The Capitals, as good as they are, they've always had trouble getting over that hump. They've always,
Just to add something on that one, they actually just announced that Philip Grubauer, their backup goalie, is going to start game one for them. Yeah.
All right. So there's a hot take there. There's a take.
Yeah.
I think that's a very intriguing series, and considering the Blue Jackets' star power, and now you got the backup goalie game one. They're probably foaming at the mouth. Let's get going.
Yeah.
The playoffs. So I think that's going to be.
If you think about it, that's going to be a fun series. And also, if you think about it, if they ride Grubauer all the way to the Stanley Cup, what's going to happen to Braden Holtby? It's going to be another Marc-Andre Fleury situation where they'll find Holtby expendable, and just like that, John Carlson's not going to be available in free agency.
Yeah, they could ride him for the Stanley Cup playoffs. What a storyline that would be, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as always, it's going to be a great first round of the playoffs. What series do you think could be a sweep? Is there any?
I'm looking at this right now. I don't think there's going to be any sweeps this year.
Yeah.
Although, I don't think there's going to be any sweeps this year. But I really, really hope the Avs sweep the Preds.
That would be sweet. Even though it's tough, it would be nice. It would be nice.
It would be nice, yes. They're down a goalie. Eric Johnson's not going to be available to them. But wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah, for no doubt about it. Yeah, I don't see a sweep either. Realistically, you think the Avs? We're talking about them beating them, but I'd say if we're gonna go realistic, I'd say they probably get one. I don't know if they get two. I like the Penguins, and I like the Penguins in five. I think the Devils could maybe stretch the Lightning to six. I think that could possibly.
I think Penn Flyers will go to seven games.
Yeah. That's gonna be fun. Bruins and Leafs, I think that could go seven. It's a very we didn't touch on Jets and Wild. I think the Jets all the way in that one. I think that could be
if there would be a sweep, it would be Jets Wild. But I think it's gonna be Jets and five.
Yeah, I think when someone's always going to have a bad night, so I think the Wild could steal one there. So that was just looking at the first round, but let's fast forward all the way to the end of May. Who do you have in the Stanley Cup final?
Oh dear God! realistically looking at it, deciding on just by personnel and how they play. Preds Lightning.
Oof. Good pick. Yeah. I'm definitely going for Preds and Canes in the final, for the conference final.
Uh-huh.
That'd be really, really fun.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. And then probably for the East, I'd probably say Boston and Pittsburgh. So probably for the final, I'm looking at Pittsburgh has got a good chance to get their three-peat, as much as I would hate that. I just hate Crosby.
Yeah, No.
But, I think coming out of the West, I think the Preds have the best shot at stopping the Penguins if the Penguins got that far. But then the Penguins got the Bruins in the way. And I really like the Bruins. I really like the Bruins.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's interesting. Again, if there's one upset here or there, it can really set things on fire. But it starts tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it starts tomorrow. And another, just something that I want to add. Preds Lightning is, I think, the consensus pick for the Stanley Cup Final. But here's my wild card Stanley Cup Final. Kings Bruins.
Kings Bruins. I like it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll speak to the consensus there of Preds and Lightning. But if I were to pick a dark horse like you, I'd like the Kings, too. I think the experience there would really... Really, they would get them there. So yeah, I'd say Kings and
Kings and Bruins. Kings and Bruins, and then you end up a scenario where, two teams won the cup thrice.
Yeah, and that's something special, definitely.
Yeah.
But I always hope the Cup Final goes to seven, even the Hawks are in or not. You know, we got to see the best of the best. We got to see them for the maximum amount of games.
Game seven overtime. That's the dream.
Oh, my gosh. If the Hawks are in or not, my heart's going to be pounding.
Yep. That's the dream. Game seven overtime.
I mean, just like, especially, not even just being at home, but like, especially like if you're at the game. I mean, you can't sit down, you can't relax, because every single shot could go in. Every single shot is a possibility.
And I was telling people that this will actually be the first Stanley Cup playoffs where I won't be as stressed as I used to be. But I think I was speaking way too early on that.
I mean, I'm not necessarily rooting for anybody, but you know, if it comes to a point where the Avalanche are up, it's game seven, I'm rooting for the Avs. You know, there's a point where I'm gonna be jumping up and down off the couch, no doubt, if there's a team that I want to lose so bad. So I mean, I can't wait for it to start. I think when you look at all the sports playoffs, especially when your team's in it, I think hockey playoffs are hard to beat. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love football, I love the World Series, I love the NBA, but I mean, when you're looking at hockey, you know, especially when it comes to overtime, I think it just gets so fun.
Oh yeah, heart attack hockey. That's I said earlier.
Oh my god.
Game seven in overtime. That's the dream.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Quick Cubs update. The Cubs opened up on the north side today. After yesterday's snow out. It's April. Yeah, we had a snow out. The Cubs right now are down 5-2 in the bottom of the fourth.
Oh dear,
that's tough. Yeah, they got Chatwood on the bump today, so not ideal. You want to start off with a homestand, but you know, Chatwood's not, you know, going on some Cubs talk here. Chatwood's not who they're looking for the big numbers. You know, they obviously want other guys, but no, Chatwood's through four. He's got five earned, five Ks. So yeah, not too good what you're looking for there, but. And the Cubs are without Rizzo, too.
Yeah, that sucks for me because I have Tyler Chatwood in my fantasy baseball team. So.
Oh, man, you might want to bench him after today, man. That's my best guess. I'll pick up somebody on the waiver wire.
I know. Somebody dropped CeCe Sabathia the other day.
Oh, I maybe go for him. I mean, I think him and Chatwood could obviously be rotating in your spot. You know, not like that I hate Chatwood. I think he was an okay signing considering – you know, everyone made a big deal about Chatwood, how he was, like, good away from Coors Field, how they were saying, oh, the, you know, the Denver's messing him up with, you know, Mile High or whatever. You know, I'm not really buying into that a lot. I'm not buying into that much. But if he's going to produce away from Coors Field, then, you know, go get him. Let's see what he can do with the Cubs. And, you know, you got a new pitching coach, and you got a good staff around him. You got, you know, John Lester and Quintana, so you got a lot of veterans around him. But you know, it's just one game in the grand scheme of things. Again, I hate how everyone's already panicking
and
about the Cubs.
He had a good start against the Reds. So.
Yeah, he did. So you know, it's just one game. It's one little hole, one little bump in the road.
Yep.
But as we come down to the last 5 minutes of the show, I wanted to touch on one more thing here. Oh, yeah, that's one more thing here. Artem Anisimov, is he on the team next year?
No.
Oh. I was leaning toward the no side too. I think whether it's on, I think he could be a piece on a draft day trade or just during the off season. He does have the now the modified trade movement, so he can submit the list of ten, submit a list of 10 teams, and you know that makes it easier on himself, and that makes it easier on the Hawks.
Yeah.
So if you know,
I
if
think
he finds somebody,
I think Bowman trades for a cheaper defenseman, for a cheaper center.
Yeah, but maybe you find somebody on a 2-3 or you know a defenseman that's on a 2-3 deal that's cheap. You know, now you got some more cost control. Hopefully he's just better than Connor Murphy. You know, you want to have a guy that's what's better than Murphy, but
I think Murphy had a good second part of the season. I think Murphy does best, you know, he has his mistakes, but I think Murphy does best on the stay at home role. When he tries to join the rush, that's when things go sideways. But there was that Gustafson Murphy pairing for like two or three games where Gustafson would join the rush and Murphy would just stay at home. And that worked.
Yeah, I mean I'm not a big fan of Murphy just yet. Again, there was some I saw more negatives than positives, so that's why my bias leans that way, but you know, it's not like he wasn't getting scratched, so he wasn't really in Q's doghouse. So I guess that was good. But yeah, I mean, if you want to have him more at the stay at home role, and maybe that's where he fits best, then, you know, you pair him with a Gustafson, or you pair him with Gustafson, another offensive guy. But and I think Anisimov is good enough still too that a team would take on his whole 4.5 cap hit. I don't think that'd be a problem where the Hawks would have to split it. Has that reached the end of our show? Tristan, thanks for coming on. It was good having you out for an hour for the Hawks.
It was great. Anytime that I can talk about hockey is a good day.
No, me too. Mm-hmm. You can follow Tristan on Twitter at Tristan J. Angulo. He's my Blackhawks beat writer for Windy City Chronicle. Does a lot of great work. I'm glad that, again, I always say it, I'm glad that I added him on the staff back at the beginning of the season. You know, how it started was Tristan and I would switch off covering games, but then, you know, Tristan decided to take the reins away from me and become the full-time Blackhawks guy, and that was a blessing for me and a blessing for the staff, you know, for we could see a lot more of his writing. So, again, thanks for that, and thanks for all the coverage season long, man.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for thinking about adding me to the staff. I've done writing before, but I never did any sports writing before this. So I'm glad that I've been somewhat integral to the website.
Yeah, not a problem, man. Of course, you know, it takes a little bit to get into it, but once you get into it, sports writing, podcasts, all that stuff can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, again, follow Tristan on Twitter at Tristan J Angulo. He has his postseason postmortem up on WinnieCityChronicle.com. Go check that out. He's going to take a little bit of a break here, as we agreed upon. He's going to take a little bit of a break, enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs, like we all are, and then he'll be back to cover the draft lottery, the draft, the off season. So again, definitely worth a follow because he's going to be all on top of the Blackhawks news, just like everyone will be. Come lottery and drafts and free agency, because everyone's going to see how Bowman and Q improve the team. Because again, we hope to have the Hawks right back in it next year. So again, Tristan, thanks. Signing off here, another edition of the Windy City Chronicle podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Gibbons. He's Tristan Angulo. We'll see you next time.